Welcome to this episode of the Elite Advisor Podcast. This is our 200th episode. I love doing this podcast. I love the advisors I get to meet. And thank you for all of your feedback, your reviews, and for hanging out with us. We have a treat for you today. I invited on some friends and some past guests to unpack for you resistance. As advisors, as entrepreneurs, resistance is waiting for us every morning when we wake up, and its purpose is for us to not achieve our full potential. So we're going to dive into some real stories from some very successful people on how they've hit and overcome resistance in their career. So my hope is you realize you're not alone in this. When you have the frustrating days, when you feel resistance is heavy, there's a path forward, and most of it is up to you. So it's possible. Let's dive in and hear from our guests. Josh, thanks for being here, brother. This is the 200th episode. When I was thinking about people to have back on, you came to mind because I love the poem, The Man in the Arena. And when I think of an entrepreneur that has stayed in the arena, accomplished a lot, fought to learn a lot, you came to mind.
Oh, well, I'm honored. Well, thanks so much, Dan. Well, you're a good friend and excited to be on again.
Yeah. So when I use the word resistance, I'm curious, like what story immediately comes to mind for you, and how do you define that in your world?
Oh, well, I've had several things that come to mind. One in particular was, this is back in probably 2014. I was building at the time DrAxe.com. And the business had gone really well for the past 2 years. I mean, early in my business career, I had a functional medicine practice, and that did pretty well. And just really decided I had a desire to step out of that and do something bigger online. In 2014, I ended up having a major back injury. I was lifting weights, doing CrossFit, and ended up herniating a disc in my back and bulging another. And I was down and out for a month. I mean, I couldn't hardly walk, do anything. And for the next year, just major pain. And during that time, I actually worked a lot less. I probably got down to working 20 hours a week rather than my 50 hours a week before. And that was major resistance. I mean, just dealing with chronic pain and those sort of issues all the time. You know what was crazy though? That taught me something, is that I was relying far, far too much on myself in business. And so rather than me doing everything, which is what I was doing at the time, I decided I was just going to coach up my top team players. One was Evan Tardy, an amazing entrepreneur, a great marketer. And I had one or two other people on the team, and I would basically just talk to them constantly and just say, hey, try and direct them and lead them. And we went from, our business has multiplied tremendously. We went from 500,000 in 14 to then 2 million to then 12 to then 50. And then to about 100. I mean, it was like really just hand over, just a lot of growth. But the big thing was me getting myself out of the way and really focusing on pouring into my team, helping them grow, helping them fulfill their dreams, get better. So there are a few things there. One, I definitely, and a lot of people probably experience this. It could be relationship issues, a physical health issue. You have some resistance there. But I was kind of part of the resistance as well. Like, I was resistant to change. I felt like I could do everything. Like, and here's the truth for some people. Like, I was doing a lot of writing and editing at the time, like writing a newsletter. I was editing things, creating even graphics. And even when I hired writers and editors, I was probably, if I'm being realistic, like I was a better writer and editor than they were. I spent so many years doing it. So, but if they could get it to be about 75 to 80% as good as I could, that was enough. And that was sort of a principle that I walked away with there as well, saying, hey, it doesn't have to be perfect. They don't even have to be me. They just have to do a good job. And that's the only way that, you know, I think a really business can scale, is if you get out of the way and you're the coach, you're the leader, and everyone else there, you help get in their right seats on the bus and perform at a high level.
So you had to accept an 80% product and know that that was good enough.
That's right. Yep, that's right. Absolutely. So
in that story, the resistance was just your kind of head trash? Like, it was just you?
Yeah, well, I'd say there's two things. I mean, my physical ailment was a resistance. But then I think I realized the bigger resistance was myself, to like constantly trying to control everything. And I was keeping the business from growing. Like I was the roadblock, because I didn't delegate enough and I didn't trust my team enough and I didn't train my team enough.
Yeah. How do you feel? And I don't know if you've called it different things in your career, like your awareness of resistance. Like we're talking about that stuff in hindsight as it's happening. How has your awareness of resistance improved over time? Like, are you pretty attuned now when something feels like it's slowing you down?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think that there's the business component of the natural thinking. I think there's even an element there of maybe a spiritual sense there that I have as well. I think that I used to see resistance and maybe I used to get discouraged when I came up against it. And maybe I used to feel more frustrated about it. And now I try and step back. This is what I do. When I'm coming across resistance and maybe there's been, listen, you're going to come across resistance in business constantly, right? I hardly have a day where there's not somewhere there's some sort of resistance. But I think something where it's like I'm going, you know, there's a few times I'm like, okay, this thing isn't budging or moving like I want it to. What I really try and do now is step back and really look at the big picture. And then the other thing I try and do is I try and say, okay, is there someone else who has dealt with this type of problem and overcame it? And sometimes that's me making a call to someone like yourself or, you know, other friends of mine like Michael Hyatt or, you know, all kinds of people, you know, Jordan Rubin, and just saying, hey, what's your advice on this? I know you've dealt with this before. And if I don't have someone in my inner circle like that, I ask maybe a friend of a friend, or if that doesn't work, then I'll try and step back and I'll do online research. I mean, today I would use ChatGTP. Or a search and say, who is somebody that dealt with this roadblock? How did they overcome it? And then I'll try and take that framework and strategy that they did and apply it to my own business.
And that happens quick now for you. I think if someone challenged me, I'd say, of course, there's somebody that's done what I'm trying to do and I know I can learn from them. But I do feel like I'll sit in a state of frustration. Like, I think I can solve this problem on my own or within my own team when maybe my instinct should be pretty quickly I should look outside.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it used to take me a little bit longer. Now I've realized enough times, it's just so much faster to model someone that's already done it. It's just so much faster.
That's good. What about success? And I know since we're buddies, some of the stuff you've done, is there a time where you'd look to where you say, actually, I won or accomplished something and that was a form of resistance? Like it made me take my eye off the ball. Maybe my head got a little too big. Because I know for advisors who most of are, you start making a few hundred grand, you're like, hey, I've done it. I'm kind of coasting. And it's like the winning is actually the thing holding you back.
Yeah. Yeah. I experienced that fairly recently. So I had a company that I built up. It sold and a portion of it. And it was a really big financial event. And then we had another 5 years of really growing and thinking something was going to be thinking that another company I had was going to go way bigger. And then, by the way, the market was so hard. So like I sold in a really, my first sale was at a really early, and this was 2018 when the market was good, very good. And then I had another sale in 2024. And in the market, it was just really bad. And so I thought I was going to have this big equity event. And to be honest, I kind of coasted a little bit there too for a year or so, just thinking, hey, I've got this big equity event coming. I'm going to kind of have money to invest and do some other things. And it didn't happen at all. I mean, really, it was almost nothing happened. And I thought it was going to be a very, very successful outcome. And it sort of put me in the position where I had to go back and say, okay, you know what? Like, I just need to start doing what I love again. And also what God has gifted me in. So what happened, I had spent my entire career building businesses around health. And then I thought, you know, it's going to be fun to step more into the leadership, personal growth space. I wrote a book called Think This, Not That. It did well, but it wasn't, it didn't really flourish as early as I wanted it to. And then what I kind of realized was, you know what, I think that even though I think what I need to do is I need to go back to what I was doing before from the standpoint of health, but I just need to get more broad with it and that'll bring more excitement to it. So I'm going to bring in more faith-based stuff. I'm going to bring in some personal growth. I'm not going to focus on business as much. And for me, it was just the right mix. So I had to kind of reinvent things a little bit as well, but also get to things I was passionate about. And so I did have kind of that as well. But I did have this sort of, hey, I'm sort of comfortable. And you know what really helped? Like right now, I've got a business that's called the Health Institute, and it's a virtual practice. And so we have patients come in, I have practitioners that work on my team, and it's growing incredibly well. But a part of that was also getting back to having a big vision, getting the right team, just getting around the right people. That's something I think that's so important too. When you're around the right people, it's inspiring, it's motivating. And so if anybody feels stuck, I would say reevaluate and step away from just the money. What's that big thing you want to do that, like for me, it's really based on faith, advancing the kingdom of God, having a big impact in that way. What's that big thing? And I'm very goal oriented, just continuing to reset goals. Like for instance, I've got a podcast and we've been ranking, you know, I restarted it. So we were unranked and then we were, you know, 200th. And then we were last year, we were around 70. And then now like this last week, we're number 23. And my goal is to get back up in the top 10 in health podcasts. But it's fun, like strategizing and going after something really hard. So I think for people, you just have to find something that you're really excited about that you can go after. And I think because almost everybody listening to your show here, they're motivated, they're entrepreneurial. So you got to reengage and find that prize to go after.
And I think there's an element, as I look at my story, where, as you said, resistance was like caused frustration, fear, and then over time, kind of embracing it and recognizing it's not going anywhere. Like it's waiting for me, I ignore it or not. And then almost kind of welcoming it in is almost like a part of the team to say, you know, how do I use it to my advantage?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It can be a motivator.
So when you talk about people, within the last probably 4 or 5 years, this has been one of the biggest points of resistance for me in business, is in the early stages, I hired people I liked that I wanted to see do well. And yeah. It worked for a while until I realized they're not helping very much. Like, and that's on me as the leader that I didn't set good expectations. And I kind of set the rule book. And then I had to go in and change the rule book, which people didn't like, to start holding people accountable and pushing towards things where it's like, can I be a kind boss, but also one that keeps them accountable and pushes them to be better? And realizing those are totally different people that you're trying to attract. And so for me, when I've plateaued in the last, you know, 5, 6 years, it was usually like because I just can't do anything more by myself.
Yeah.
What's been your journey with hiring, attracting talent, retaining people, and the resistance on that?
Yeah. So I think there's a few things there. One, if you want to attract, it's, you know, John Maxwell has an amazing book on this. Some of you have read it, you know, the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. And he really gets into, if you want to attract level 7 and 8 level, you know, talent that's a level 8, you need to be a level 9. You know, yourself. And so really saying, I'm going to grow personally. I'm going to have a bigger vision. I'm going to be that right type of leader. So I think it really starts there. You're a bigger leader. You've got a bigger vision. And people can't cut that corner. I mean, again, I know people have heard this before, but you just can't not have that. I mean, that's the single biggest thing. Like for myself, like if you're a high level leader, you want to follow a higher level leader than you. And so you need to constantly be focused on growth. I mean, I've read 20 John Maxwell books and, you know, constantly listening to sermons and other things, Tony Robbins, it's things to help me grow. Yeah. And then writing those things and teaching those things myself to my staff and team. And so I think that is really the most critical thing. The next thing is then hire people, have high standards for your team. And help them reach and live those on standards yourself and help them reach those standards. So, you know, like, and we have standards in, number one is their character. Right. So, and by the way, this became even more important during COVID when things became political and you had all of these different kind of social ideas kind of trying to take place in the workplace. Like we went out and I'm like, listen, we hire first for people that align with the character of our company. I want people that are not entitled. I want people that are grateful. I want people to have hard work ethic. They don't complain. They give it their all. They want to grow and get better. So that's first and foremost. You hire and make sure this person is a high character person. The next thing is I hire for people that have a high ceiling in terms of they could grow in their talent. Like sometimes, like I can tell, and this is why I like to, sometimes before I hire somebody, I like to give them a project or two in like a test project to see how they perform, because the right people will show you that they're hungry for it, right? So you want that hunger. I want to grow. I want to get better and see that they have some level of a ceiling there. And then, they need to have the basic skills. I mean, that's something that's kind of obvious. That's kind of the third thing. But overall, those are things we look for. And then the other thing is I try not to ruin employees and team members. I try and do everything I can to create a track and path for them to grow. So we'll do monthly leadership calls. We'll read books. We'll bonus them if they read those books. We'll just create a culture of growth and leadership. And focus on those things. And I think all those things are big. And then the other thing is, like, I'm always hiring in a way, you know, like I'm always looking for high character people that I could bring over on the team. And always have kind of my eyes and ears open. And then the biggest way I've hired over the years, I mean, I don't know that I can think of where this isn't the case. All my best team members, and I'm talking about, this is well over 20, maybe even 50 people I've hired through other great people, like Facebook ads, those sort of things. I don't know that I've ever, like myself, maybe I've had other team that has, but I tend to go and say, hey, I had hired someone at the Health Institute now who is a 10 out of 10 hire, has equity in the company. Amazing. He's a guy named Adam Suttle. He was the chief sales officer at Groove Life. They do like rubber, you know, rings and a number. It just, I mean, 10 out of 10 character. Work ethic was, and I asked Maggie, who was a 10 out of 10 team player, I said, who is the most amazing person you know who would fit the role of running a company, being a president? And, you know, I asked her two or three times, and 3 months later, she said, hey, this guy, and she was right, you know? So, I mean, mining your own, you know, your own team for talent and other people you know that are high quality, virtuous people, and that's how you'll find the best people every time.
Adam is also the coach of my son's little league team.
Oh, he is. Five kids himself. The guy is, he's great.
Love it. Well, bro, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for sharing the story. It's helpful to hear, especially for somebody that's done the things you've done, like resistance is a factor for you too. And it's not going away, but like, how can we recognize it and overcome it?
Yeah. So you're asking that question. How do we recognize it and overcome it?
Yeah, and obviously, I think for everybody listening, just saying like that—that's something you've
This is where when I'm hiring certain people now, like I want people to have an element of using metrics and data, you know, whether it's my social media or, of course, our CFO or our president, but even even marketing and sales. I mean, every area of the business, there should be some sort of metrics we can judge. Based on, are we winning or not? You know, Marcus Buckingham wrote a great book years ago called First Break All the Rules. And he went and said, what are the things that employees need the most? They have to have this in order to win. And the biggest thing was, what's my scoreboard? Am I winning or not? People have to know that. And so there are some people who are just doing social media and there's no goals that month. There's no specific metrics. You've got to have a number you're driving towards. And then creatively saying, okay, how do we reach that number? Like what I just gave the podcast as an example. Like right now with my podcast, we're going through, how do we go from number 23 to number 10? Like that's the next thing. Okay, let's bring on more high profile guests. Let's do more reach out. How can we do that? You know, like I've got Tim Tebow coming on next month, which will be cool. Dallas Jenkins, who did the Chosen series. But this was through really, you know, connecting and doing some things. And so let's bring on more high profile guests. Let's make sure we start doing reviews. So we started doing a book giveaway. This actually really surprised me. We saw a big jump when we started doing giveaways of, like, I have got a new book out called The Biblio Diet. It's on eating based on the Bible. But like we did gave away 10 books. I think it was 10 signed copies. And we said, if you do this, you'll be in a pool if you go and leave a review on Apple, right? On iTunes. And we had like 300 new reviews. And that was really big. So, but my point there is you have to have a number. Every team, ideally, or all your top people need to have a number that they're driving towards. And then you need to coach them up and do everything you can to help them reach that goal. Because I know the question was about resistance, but I just wanted to say what I found is we constantly are able to get through the resistance and get more creative when there's a number that you're holding people to and getting incentive, you know, creating incentives and things in order to help people to get to the number. That helps a lot of resistance. And then teaching your team to, like, here's another example. Like Ashley, who runs my podcast, I will tell her, I'll say, okay, what are we trying to do here? Like, I'll say, where are we stuck right now? Like, if we're not growing like we need to, or we're in a roadblock, I'll say, hey, where are you stuck? And she might say, well, you know, our thumbnails aren't performing as well as we should, or I have this issue. And I'll say, okay, well, let's talk about the best way to do that. Okay, well, here's our thoughts. And I'll typically say to her, Ashley, here's what I would do. Who can we reach out to who's doing really good thumbnails? And I'll say, here's five people I know. You know, we got Girls Gone Viral. We've got, you know, whatever, Michael Hyatt. We got this person. Okay, I'll reach out to their producer for you. But do a call with them and find out exactly what they're doing. So like I'll actually teach my team by demonstrating and doing it myself, reaching out. And here's what I see Ashley do. I mean, Ashley is amazing. I mean, she'll take initiative now and she'll just do it without me even asking. She'll just reach out to other podcast hosts and other people by doing it. Cause cause she's a good learner.
I love that. Awesome, brother, man. This is helpful. Thanks for sharing. Everybody listening, no one is immune from resistance. And so if you're ever sitting in your office frustrated, you're not alone. We all go through that.
Yeah.
Your buddy.
Yeah, I would say too, just one last thing. You know, I've also found, you know, digging in spiritually, you know, I think being around other like-minded people. I mean, for me, it's going to the Bible, spending time in prayer and meditation. I think being around like-minded entrepreneurs and friends. Those are some things as well, I think, that also help you get through resistance as well. There's a level of encouragement there. But Stan, I just want to say, hey, thanks so much for having me on, man. It was a real honor. And man, I'm excited. I'm really honored your 200th episode. And hey, congrats on all your success as well. And thanks for having me.
Thanks, brother. See you soon. Wes, welcome to the 200th episode. You must have done something right when you were on before to get invited back. So good job.
Man, happy to be here with you, Stan. I've been looking forward to our time and talking about this topic.
Well, good, man. I'm ready to dive in. I get to meet a lot of advisors, and you were definitely on a list of those that challenge me that I want to be like in many ways. So I'm looking forward to kind of hearing deeper layers from you on your journey, your life when it comes to resistance. I feel like there's a lot of us that are going through life unaware that things are holding us back somehow, whether they're obvious things or even just internal things. So when I use the word resistance, what comes to mind like right away for you?
Man, I have fallen in love with a quote. And this is from the book, The War of Art, by Stephen Pressfield. And he says, most of us have two lives, the life we live and the unlived life within us. And between those two stands resistance. And I don't know, for all of my friends and for knowing you and entrepreneurs that have created really great lives and done a lot of good for people, I would say one of the biggest common denominators is their one ability and then ultimately kind of desire to overcome what's necessary to get to that next level of rich life. And so as I think about resistance, I mean, it can come in so many forms and fashions. And I think if we're not careful, we can look at it as a negative thing. But man, it is a requirement to live in a good life. And if we're always doing some new stuff, like we and our team have this thing we always call, we want to be a beautiful savage. And a beautiful savage is one that has a big ambition and a grateful condition, but also a savage persistence to dance with the resistance between the life they're living and the unlived life within them. And so that if you're experiencing resistance, it is a wonderful indicator that you might be on a track of living an extraordinarily wonderful life. I think there's exceptions to that. And I think there's times where certainly the resistance I was experiencing was not only self-induced, but it was just taking me down a path that wasn't going to lead me to the life I wanted. So that's kind of what comes to mind when I think about that is it is this, you know, you and I work with a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners. And man, the best ones in the world that I think about all the time that are the happiest, man, they are wonderful at navigating that resistance and almost look forward to it in some weird way because it means, man, we're getting closer to where we want to end up.
When did you become aware of resistance? Was it when you read that book? I mean, I know when I read that book, it kind of put some language to it for me.
Yeah.
But I feel like most of my life, I was kind of just this, it was an uphill battle anyways, and it was just kind of the way it was.
Yeah.
I've gotten older. It's like some people don't get to live in resistance early enough to kind of adapt to it.
Yeah.
some people have really hard stories and they just get more resilience. With you and your story, was it something you're like, I just woke up one day and realized I'm good at overcoming it? Or did you have to become aware and then get better at it?
Yeah. So I, like you, Sten, grew up in an extraordinarily wealthy family with a bunch of great breaks. not true. Had great family. But we certainly, you were going to, you know, if you wanted things, you were going to work and you were going to figure out a path forward. And I always had a lot of ambition to want to do great things and didn't always know what that meant. But I also knew that it required me to meet the demands of the day. And the demands of the day were stepping out of my comfort zone. A big topic, and you and I have shared lots of discussions around this, is we always call it that constant capacity to try and normalize new things. Because, you know, the fact of the matter is new, whatever's gotten you to where you are is by definition normal, right? You've mastered it. It's become muscle memory. It actually, you can do it somewhat on autopilot in the subconscious. And new, it requires this. It almost feels like you're cheating on the real work sometimes, because it's like, well, I'm really good at this thing I've always done, or a narrative I've always given, or the way our business is running now. But if you have a big ambition and you say, okay, but what is next? And that's one of the reasons I like hanging out with you, because while things are going and we got some cool things happening, we're also talking about, hey, but what you thinking about next? And my buddy Mike Scovel always says, if you want to do great things, be around people that are up to something. Nice. And that's why I really like our conversations, because, man, I think I'm up to something, and then I hear some things that you say, and I'm like, man, I'm not up to much. I need to get up to much. You know, what's going on? But when you do that, then like you're different isn't always better. We clearly know that, but better is always different, and you cannot have one without the other. So when I found out early on, and I didn't always have the language for it or anything like that, but it was like, hey, if you want to do great things, you've got to be willing to put yourself in uncomfortable positions. Be clear about what great is too, like, and be wrong. You know, I mean, I've certainly pursued things that when I got them, I was like, yeah, this isn't really what I thought, you know, but I iterate it. And I think that is like such a fun way to live, because when you're regularly stopping yourself, and this is something that, I mean, I think you talk about, you know, I'm a part of Strategic Coach. You're familiar with Strategic Coach. I just love that every quarter I'm forced to get out of myself, I fly to Santa Monica, and I take that time to go, okay, but what's next? Like, what would a like incredible life look like 3 years from today? And I don't attach it to my past. You know, I just say, no, going forward, forgetting where I came from, what would incredible look like? And then backing that down into these 90-day increments of going, okay, then in light of where I want to be in 90 days, if I'm on a path to getting there, what are the things that are not a part of my normal that I need to blend into the rhythm of my life that are new? And it's pretty great because it also tells you, and what things are a part of my normal that shouldn't be anymore, you know? I mean, I remember sitting in one time with you, Sten, this has been years and years ago when we were first getting to know each other, and it was back when, you know, I'd hired a couple of project managers and other advisors, and we were just talking, and I said, you know, like, well, what is it? Well, like your favorite meeting that you've had over the last couple of weeks? I was like, oh, you know, it was this meeting where Cody was in it with me, and man, we just had, because, you know, I didn't have to do the meeting notes, and I had more time to be creative up front. And you said, why are you doing any meetings without Cody in them then? And I was like, because I've always done it this other way, Sten. Which is a great reason to continue to do anything, right? Well, because we've always done it. But you remember that conversation?
Oh, totally remember it. Yeah. I love, again, getting around other people because they challenge the status quo. And I think there's things we just need to accept that aren't bad, that our mind and body will hold on to what is known. Correct. And some of these frameworks help me because, like, none of us are exempt from forces around us.
Yeah.
Like the idea, like the next version of you has to drop what you're doing now. So it almost, as opposed to holding on to it, should create some urgency to drop it if you're looking the right way. But with resistance for you, you mentioned something about the self-imposed.
Yeah.
You coach a lot of advisors. Do you find that some of the biggest obstacles when you've seen the people go from like stuck to unstuck, it was mainly just like the self-imposed resistance, or is it kind of just other stuff they need to work on?
Yeah, man. So I'll kind of talk about it this way, is I believe that people, including myself, often suffer unnecessarily because of the story they're telling themselves. And I've seen this over and over again. I know you have too, where you'll have somebody that does have a desire to, they want their life to be better than it is right now. And they're figuring out what better is. And so maybe they go to, you know, one of your workshops and they're like, man, that's a really cool path. And I do think that that is better than just repeating the same business model I have today forever. And then I think one of the issues is even somebody that's saying, yes, I want that and has gone through, okay, this is a path forward. Here's what happens is then Monday, they're back in their office and they got all these emails and they got all these things yelling at them. And it is really easy to just step right back into the same rhythm without making any of the changes and intending to, but a year will go by and they're in the same place. And it wasn't because they didn't have the desire. I believe strongly it's this aspect of fatigue that, you know, because you and I can fill up our day with our normal already and still not get to everything on the list. And as I said earlier, news like, well, that's cheating on the real work, really. And, you know, it's experimental. It's never paid my mortgage. It's never, you know, put your kids through school or done what you've done. So it is one of those things that you've got to just carve out some of your very best energy. Like one of the things, here's what I thought about when we were thinking about this episode is if you think about the energy model for somebody who's making big jumps, you know, I started in this business as 24 years old. Came from an electrical contracting background. You know, I was more helping run the branch and had accounts I was responsible for, you know. So there were things that were a part of my normal that actually did serve me well coming into this business. But there's a whole bunch of new that I needed in order to be competent in this business. So you're going to classes and you're practicing narratives. And you're probably 75% new, 25% normal if this plane's going to take off the ground. And now gradually you get muscle memory and you get better at it. And so you maybe move to more 50-50 normal energy model. And when you're hitting stride, it is like 75% normal. You've normalized that new and 25% new. And here's the craziest part is if you don't go back to at least 50-50, what ends up happening is that scaling all of a sudden begins to plane off. It's like riding a one-speed bike. Eventually, at first, pedaling faster makes you go faster, right? And you get your balance and you're going. At some point, you can only pedal so fast with that existing bike. And so you got to stop, put new gears on it, you know, get new tires on it if you're going to make that next jump. But I find it so hard, especially if you get comfortable. I mean, I don't know what the most recent stats are in our business, but people coming in, they're typically not great. Like something like 10% make it 2 years and
been bad for a long time. Yeah.
Bad for a long time. We're just sure it's bad still. That's what we know. And all the people listening to this, the majority of them, they've made that curve, right? They've made that first iteration. And so it's like, you've beat the odds already by doing that. But if you're going to go to that next level, it's one, constantly believing there is one, looking for it. And then I think secondarily, understanding it will be the resistance you're going to navigate is new. Trying to make the synaptic connections in your brain, you know, forming any new habit, there's all this science behind it, is like your brain is literally struggling to make new synaptic connections. And you're bad at it, you're clunky at it. Now, the more you do it, the stronger it gets. It's like going to the gym for a month, the weight doesn't weigh as much anymore. And then you can add new things in. But it's that willingness to be tolerant of that goofy, inconsistent time. And I'll tell you this, man, this is what I love about your programs, is just giving people the opportunity to kind of role play some things with each other. Yeah. Because there is nothing more uncomfortable than being in a room of people and saying things out loud when you're trying to master some new thing. But I'll tell you, man, there is no other better alternative to getting good at something really fast. Because you can do it in a room of them. Problem is, in front of the client, it's easy. They don't even know what they're supposed to say.
Right? How do you feel? This maybe the competitive part of me, and this helped when I started framing it, is that for a long time, resistance to me, it felt like I know there's things trying to slow me down. Curveballs are always going to come. My goal was to kind of be less surprised. You know, Marcus Aurelius, some of his stuff is like never be surprised.
Yeah.
But for me, there was like a an unlocking when I started thinking of resistance as like a thing, like a person that was like waiting for me when I woke up, and its whole purpose in life was to get me to like fail that day.
Yeah.
And that just lit something up in me. You know, I watched too many Viking shows and I was born in the wrong time, but I was like, okay, I have a battle to win every day. And like, yeah. I want to win. I mean, it's not perfect. I don't win it every time, but whether that's getting in a cold plunge, whether that's waking up early, go to the gym, whether that's eating better, whether that's making those calls or forcing myself to sit in a room uncomfortably until I come up with a better solution.
Yeah.
How have you mentally framed resistance, or are you just like naturally like, I'm just a goer, I just compete?
Man, I have such a big ambition of where I want to go next and what's possible for the people that we're serving, what's possible for our team. And I know it involves us overcoming. And I almost do it like this now these days. So I certainly have had times in my life where it's like, we're going to war and we're going to win, right? And I still do. I think it depends on what it is and the season we're in. And then sometimes I kind of like just feel like it's a dance where I'm going to go, we're going to dance and we're going to dance our way to that next objective. So I appreciate you being a dance partner with me right now, Resistance. Because again, I'm not staying with you forever. I want you to understand that I'm going to pass through you and I'm going to meet a better dance partner over here. That's going to lead me to my next level. Mm. And I heard one guy tell me, he coined resistance has many faces, and it's can be fatigue. Certainly, like we talked about earlier, it could be fear and fear of, hey, what if I do this and it doesn't work? You know, what if I, in my life, because we all want our lives to be better, but, you know, sometimes we tried new stuff, didn't work or didn't work yet. Right. And so fear is another one, but I loved the way that we were talking about this, because he said, if it's taking on the face of fear, okay, so let's say you're through fatigue, you got your game plan there, but it's taking on the face of fear. He said, you know, fear, you can experience the emotion of fear without taking on the identity of being afraid. Mm-hmm. And I think they are very, very different things, because you know, fear is a good thing. Like, you should, if you don't feel fear when you're thinking about doing some things you haven't done, man, you're either an ungrounded optimist, or you're just inept, you know? And so I think confronting, like the best acronym I heard for this was for fear, there's two versions. We can face everything and run, or we can face everything and rise. Mm. And so that battle warrior mentality is, I think, the appropriate face to wear when you're combating, when resistance takes on the face of fear. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that. That's great. So I think there's an element of like normalizing it. I know there's been seasons in my life where resistance felt heavier, more direct, maybe more obvious.
Yeah.
But it sounds like, as I hear you talk about it, like it's a business partner forever. At times it's
not going away.
it's there to stay. And then partly being like, welcome to the party.
Yeah. You know,
I get this visual of like, if life's like a wind tunnel, you're either leaning into it or you're like getting blown away. Like, yeah. Really like just standing still.
That's it. And you know, there's nothing better than being surrounded by beautiful savages that get that. And we're all showing up every day to go after it and go win. And the emotional maturity necessary to kind of bump into these things that life's going to throw at us. And I'll tell you one of the questions you asked earlier that I meant to come back to on part of it, what you said, the things that are getting in our own way. Like, and certainly I think when we're aware of the different faces that resistance can put on, you know, that fatigue or the fear, I think there's one that is maybe the most sneaky of them all. And it's arrogance. Arrogance, because, you know, we get to a place where maybe you know, you're doing better than most people that you know, or the groups that you're a part of, and things are going pretty well. And it's very easy to get to a place in the business when there's plenty of cash flow and profit and things are good to go, you know, oh, that looks fine. You know, I mean, that's, you know, one of the reasons why any learning, I don't care who's doing it, I want to go learn. That's why I come see you. And I'm like, hey, what are you doing? And you're like, well, I want to hear about what you're doing. I'm like, well, I'll tell you, but let you tell me too, so we can go back and forth. Because otherwise, what happens with arrogance, I think, a lot of times is it is totally like Blockbuster Video Netflix, right? My dad was an operations director for a large franchise of Blockbuster Videos back in the day.
Yeah, man. OG.
Oh, yeah, man. It was great. But I remember him around 2000 saying, hey, I don't think that this is going to be around like a whole lot longer. I think her days are numbered. And in 2000, Blockbuster had one of its best years ever. But he was a part of the board that would meet with the actual board because they were a private franchise in this public company. And they would tell them the story about, they didn't name the name, but ultimately it was Netflix that came to them and said, hey, and keep in mind at this time, Blockbuster is a $6 billion giant with like 10,000 stores across the country. And they said, yeah, they came in and they wanted to, they had this like little bitty 140,000 subscriber company and they're doing DVDs through the U.S. Postal Service. You believe that? And they said, hey, we would like you to buy us and we'll do Blockbuster online and we'll facilitate this. We've got these, we think the internet's really going to change things as well. And they just said, well, how much would we need to pay? And they said, $50 million. And they kind of laughed him out. They said, look, if we wanted to do that, we would build it ourselves. And you know, plus nobody's not want to go to a video store, you know, brick and mortar, that's where it is. And you know, what was interesting though, is those were people that were having lots of conversations about new and about growth. They weren't dumb people, right? They actually had successful careers, but they became that place where they were going, you know, we're the giants in the industry. What could we possibly have to learn? And if you think about it, $50 million is a rounding error in the budget of a $6 billion organization. And, you know, the story tells itself, but 10 years later, Blockbuster filed bankruptcy and Netflix was like that time, $9.6 billion. Now they're, you know, you talk about a company that normalizes new, my gosh, and all the resistance that comes with it. So I think it's like those faces that keep showing up and recognizing them. And so it's like, I like to ask myself, where is that showing up in me right now? Because as you said earlier, none of us are immune to this. And I'm a handful of like bad conversations with myself away from moving in a bad road.
That's good awareness. Yeah, I do think the questioning, I mean, some of the most fascinating, successful people I've been around are the most self-aware, which I think in turn comes with like humility. It comes across, you know, like a calmness because they're not, there's not this nervous energy of trying to like fight to be seen a certain way or justify something. Before we wrap up, what I think a point of resistance I see for advisors is success. Like at times, like winning holds you back. And I think our industry unintentionally be pretty good about like, hey, you're making a few hundred grand a year, like good job. Now coast.
Yeah.
And it's tough when I know, and I get to watch stuff you're doing that's no longer like income motivated.
Yeah.
But there's something cool about breaking through like the, hey, I'm not scared for my basic needs anymore. And I can like dream a little bit. And then the stuff that can be accomplished after that. So what would you say to the advisors listening that are kind of feeling like, hey, I think I'm doing pretty good. And that they don't know that maybe the success they have so far is the resistance.
Yeah. You know, man, there's a behavioral psychologist, Arthur Brooks, and he teaches a class at Harvard on the art and science of happiness. Has like a 3-year waiting list. He's written several books, one with Oprah, I mean, best-selling books. But he breaks down, and because here's what I would say to the coasters, right, is here's what I know. I know you want to be happier because there's not a person, logical person on the planet that doesn't want to be happier today than they were yesterday and happier tomorrow. We can disagree on what that may be, but Arthur breaks this down into the 3 micronutrients of happiness. He calls them enjoyment, satisfaction, and meaning. And enjoyment being have to do with people, pleasure, and memories. So if you eat Thanksgiving dinner with the people you like and maybe have a glass of wine, that combines all 3. Or go on a hunt. And you know, later, the reason I've got some of these heads in my office here are because I can remember the story of me hunting with my friend or my dad, and it comes up in there. So that's like the enjoyment. But then you have satisfaction and meaning. So these are very interconnected. Meaning has everything to do with faith, family, friends, and work that matters to others. Meaning has everything to do with a big ambition. If you don't have a bigger ambition than your current today, you are going to be somewhat absent of the micronutrient of happiness when it comes to meaning. And if that does not have something to do with someone other than yourself, you will not fully engage. Because I know lots, you know them too, lots of guys that, man, got a big ambition, but it is me focused. And you see that in the way their lives live. But then here's the tricky one is satisfaction. You cannot have satisfaction without overcoming hard things. Unless you think about some of the most satisfying things you've ever done growing up, or you know, when you're in athletics and playing basketball and started your company and from where it was to where it is today, went through all the transitions, hired people, were scared, got wins and successes. There is a common thread. And it is, you had to struggle. You had to overcome something hard. You had to maybe go through a little pain. Maybe it made a little difficulty, because it is a necessary component to those three micronutrients. So that enjoyment, satisfaction, meaning. So here's what I'd say to him is, at some point, I think this will happen to you, is if you're coasting, eventually that's not going to hold a lot of meaning for you. It certainly won't produce a ton of satisfaction. It doesn't mean you have to just grow your business like crazy. Maybe you've got an exit plan and that's the next phase, but you better still have meaning, and you better have that's those things hard that you're overcoming. Resistance can be your friend when you treat it the right way and understand what phase it's wearing.
Good word. Brother, always good to see you.
You too, man.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk soon.
All right, buddy.
The time is here. Our Overcoming Resistance course is now live. I would give anything to go back in time and have this information earlier in my career. I would have wanted to reject average and recognize the most important decisions I should make as a business owner. Visit gobeelite.com to access the course now. I wish I would have had this sooner, and now I'm giving it to you. Rick, welcome back to the podcast, man. We had you recently, but when I was thinking of the 200th episode and to unpack resistance and getting to hear your story, I'm glad you're able to make time to hang out with us again.
Stan, thank you for having me. Had a great time at the podcast, and excited to be here again to share and give back.
Well, congratulations. I know we don't say this, but to everybody, Rick is the top fee-based financial planner in all of Northwestern Mutual. So congrats on that. For being different. Our industry is still not saying that's maybe the right way to do it. It's saying it's one way of doing it. But I was listening to an AI episode the other day with some guy, and he's talking about how AI is going to disrupt every industry. And I feel like your practice, my practice, is set up to sustain itself much more if managing assets becomes a thing of the past, or insurance can be bought from your phone, instant underwriting. So today I want to unpack resistance with you. And when you hear the word resistance, what gets triggered in you immediately? What story comes to mind? What part of your career?
I think resistance, when I think about that word, I think it's a moment of reflection, learning, and gratitude. I don't think there's any mountain that is smooth. And if it's smooth, it's probably very difficult for you to climb, but it's about embracing it. When it comes to learning, it's about understanding that resistance is a moment of digging deep, finding strength. And each and every time, as long as you don't give up, you'll break through any resistance to unleash a greater level. So yeah. I embrace resistance. I love it. In fact, I'm constantly, my wife says this about me, I'm constantly challenging myself. My life is somewhat, actually, very much so chaotic, but I love living in a world of chaos, but making sure it's peaceful. So yeah. I love resistance. It's an opportunity to learn.
Do you feel like you've always been aware of resistance, or was there a point in your life where you're like, hey, I think this force I'm trying to overcome, and I know with my story, my hope was someday the resistance would go away, like I'd overcome it fully. Until I realized, like, it's just this ever-present thing that I just have to get better at kind of defeating every day and recognizing. When would you say you became aware that, like, resistance, this force kind of always pushing at you, was really a thing?
I think the moment I experienced massive resistance was when I was in college and my professor has said to me, I don't think finance is the right major for you to pursue. In fact, you're probably a communication major, and told me that finance is probably too complex for me. And I wanted to graduate in 4 years undergrad, because in an Asian household, if you don't graduate in 4 years undergrad or less, it's absolutely unacceptable. You'll probably go home to a homeless environment where you're on the streets. But although I had credits that were somewhat behind because I was figuring out my life, I was able to graduate in 4 years with a over 3.2 GPA, which meant a lot to me. But although I found my college journey to be difficult because it was a time where I was away from home, just really figuring out what adulthood and being independent was all about.
Yeah.
Probably easily the hardest part of my life is actually joining this business. Recently, someone asked me, Rick, your firm Midas Wealth is named after your son. Would you like your son or your children to follow your footsteps into this career? And my honest answer to them was, I'm not sure.
Hmm.
I think this business, what we do, is hands down one of the hardest type of role, not physically hard, but mentally exhausting careers out there. So I think probably the moment of reflection and massive resistance was how much I struggled in this business. And not because I wasn't good at what we do, which in the last time we recorded a podcast, it was because what people did or the training or the process that was taught to us when we started just wasn't good for us.
That's right.
And after breaking through that resistance, I was able to see a whole new opportunity, a career and life. And today I'm so excited with our process and philosophy to better serve our clients and community.
What does, so resistance, knowing your story, was you didn't have a lot of support within, you know, your close circles. The industry, the business itself wasn't necessarily set up to have you succeed right away. You had to navigate and find your path. So that was a lot of external resistance. But what about the internal resistance? And then even today, is it more external forces or is it really mainly internal resistance that you faced?
I think today, frankly, as I think back, is back then, there was a lot of external resistance because 20 years ago when I joined this business industry, there was very few minorities. Mm. 20 years ago, because my family wasn't aware of what financial services were all about, they were disappointed and they were really, quite frankly, upset that I joined this profession. Today, fast forward 19 plus years later, they're extremely proud, excited. And actually tomorrow, my parents and I are going to an evening event where I'm being recognized as top 50 Asian American in the country in business. So it's kind of like going through that entire life journey of adversity and finally achieving what is somewhat like a summit or a pinnacle. Mm-hmm. And but in order for you to go through that journey, that's where you will sooner or later arrive at the destination. But today, I think all the resistance that I'm facing is for sure more internal than external. Now, although it's internal, it's me creating these resistance, not that it's really out there. And I say this because, Stan, you and I have been in business long enough. If we do what we're supposed to do for over a decade, you build a massive business where we're, you know, we can cruise in somewhat type of way, especially if we build the right infrastructure team and supporting cast. But what type of resistance? I was just telling a good friend of mine, I'm taking another designation in my 19th year to business while my kids are going back to school, while we just hired three new team members, and I'm constantly finding ways to level up, improve, and get better. So, and when I think about resistance, for anyone that, and I could tell you and I, we embrace health, fitness, and becoming our best version. Like, how many of us go to the gym, and when we're lifting weights, we say, you know what? This is quite heavy. Let me put it down. Mm-hmm. I want the lightest weight. Because the truth of the matter is, if you want to grow muscle, if you want to physically transform, resistance is necessary. So for me, when I go to the gym, I'm constantly saying, hey, my workout routine, how can I level up, push, and pull heavier weights to create that ultimate transformation?
Yeah. I feel like when you start this business, resistance is really obvious. It's like you just got to figure out a way to make money. You know, you just the pressure every day. Is this business right for me? Why don't clients want to work with me? Do I even have anything to offer to clients? As you have hit some big mile markers and you've gotten to a place where you have a team, income, and it's less obvious, I do feel like there's a big section of our industry of advisors that are making enough money, meaning they could pretty much coast. Their AUM will grow naturally. You know, they'll get some organic referrals here and there. What do you say and how do you set an example for your team when it's, you almost really want to start, keep solving higher quality problems. The goal is not to like check out at any point.
I tell people in this business that the two killers is people that struggle and never and give up too easily and never, you know, finish and break through. And the second is for the people that have broken through and found a certain level of success, they're comfortable, they're cruising. They believe success is defined by external factors like, oh, we get a ribbon, we're on stage, we win an award. But when was it about us? And why are we putting a ceiling on our potential? So for me, I'm just constantly thinking of how to get better. Fortunate to say, the last 10 years, we're averaging, I believe, over 35% growth rate on a revenue basis. Every single year, the last 10 years, we're having our best year ever. And I don't know when this streak is going to end, but my hope and my expectation is I'm going to hit every year best year ever until I retire. Nice. And then pass the torch. Because at the end of the day, I think most of us that are advisors, we're maybe looking at financial numbers because that's what we do, like revenue growth. But it's just about, for me, it's about impact. But for me, what's even more important, where we talk briefly about AI, it's experience. It's experience. Mm-hmm. And fee-based planning process, I was telling this to another colleague, was never about products, which is what the industry is constantly teaching us and norms. It's about us. People are paying to engage with us in a relationship because then you are the value. Yeah. When will advisors start realizing if you give the power to the products as the ultimate value, you will have no value and you will be replaced by technology. But when we start identifying and realizing we are truly what's valuable, clients want to work with us to have access to all the various capitals. It's not just financial capital, intellectual capital, social capital, relationship capital that we possess. That's how we help our clients get to that next level. And we ultimately have a responsibility to constantly level up and get better. And I just thrive just when I think about the challenges that I'm facing. And like I said, all my friends, family, clients, like Rick, you're just constantly, like, I I'll give you a great example. A few years ago, I heard taking cold showers was a thing. And I said, you know what? I'm going to take cold showers. Sten, I've been taking cold showers for over 2 years now, and I can't turn off that mindset, because I was like, hey, I love the cold shower, because once that water hits me and my body feels that sting, it excites me, because I know I'm going through pressure, resistance that most people can't endure. And that's how we get better, stronger every day.
Yeah, I read an article, this was a little while ago, where it talked about the body actually gets better at handling resistance the more you do it. And that with like cold showers or cold plunges, if you're mentally struggling to get into it ahead of time, meaning like you've just adapted so much that it's not really challenging your brain, that it actually doesn't have as much of a positive effect on you.
That's right.
The more your body rejects something and then you overcome it, like that's the rep you want.
Absolutely.
How are you? And I know I look at my story in the last few years, the biggest resistance I faced was, okay, how do I not make it about myself anymore? That can this business truly thrive without me? What does it look like to hire and develop and encourage people? How can I try to replicate myself versus saying, no, it can only be me. I have to always be the main advisor. How are you facing that resistance of, you had a simpler process early on that you were fully in control with. Your life has gotten more chaotic. There's only so much Rick to go around, and you're building this team. How have you handled the resistance of like growing a team and leading others?
I think it starts by checking your ego at the door. And you and I are getting older. I think when people are young and less mature, it's about themselves. But once they get to a certain place in life, they start realizing how fragile life is. And it's about really being surrounded by great, incredible human beings. So I am the first to acknowledge that I am not the smartest, nor will I ever pretend I'm the smartest, nor am I perfect. But every single day, I believe we have a choice where we could be in the business, on the business, or away from the business. I know for many advisors that first join our industry or any type of entrepreneurial journey, we think about, hey, income, impact, and independence. But there are too many advisors that throughout that path have forgotten about independence, because work will never end, right? Especially for firms like yours and mine. It's just constantly, with the amount of volume clients are excited to work with us, engage with us. We can't be here. If there's more hours than 24 hours, we'll probably be stuck here for the entire day. But I really do believe that we need to understand that in the business is the beginning. On the business is when you go from self-employed to being a CEO. And then finally, you can be away from this business and really operate this company infrastructure without you being there. And that's when you truly have built a successful firm.
Yeah. And I do think some of the resistance or head trash is, if what you've done is working, kind of keep doing it. And I think our business tells us that, like, take an average behavior, something that's worked, and then just do more of it constantly versus, I know I have to break the thing that worked in order to make it better moving forward. How are you, and a lot of times we don't know what it is until it's upon us. As you look at your business today, what is the courageous move you have to make next? Like the most disruptive thing that you're like, I know our practice in 5 years has to look totally different. Is that courageous move you further removing yourself? Or what could that look like?
The future of our industry requires massive growth and expansion. I believe that I think our industry's retention is only 10% make it to the fifth year. 90% of the people that join our industry are not that good at what they do, or they're not really being trained the right way to get to where they need to be. But there are so many incredible men and women that are in financial services doing what we do that can be in different roles. Mm-hmm. So at the place that we are today, and I never thought I'd be in that place, because we, in our last podcast, talked about me being a member of leadership, then saying, hey, I need to step back, be my wife and my kids. I think it comes down to cloning ourselves. Mm-hmm. So right now, we built our firm to an infrastructure and size where we're really happy on how we're able to problem solve for our clients. I have yet to meet a client where their net worth at 7 figures, 8 figures, 9 figures, ultra high net worth that we can't problem solve. So I'm super excited. But now it's about expanding that footprint. So the next 12 to 18 months, it's actually about recruiting. I can't believe I'm saying this, but previously, when I was a managing director and my role was to expand the territory, I was recruiting, training, and developing while client-facing. But the recruiting, training, and development was more of my time than client-facing. Today, in our role, I see more clients than training, developing, and nor do I even focus on recruiting, because most of the people we recruit are operation-related roles. But the next 12 to 18 months, in order for Midas Well to do to achieve its version of its greatest potential, I need to expand nationally. Right. So we've hired a recruiter the last 12 months to recruit advisors, to recruit insurance operation, investment operations, CFAs, CFPs, CPAs, attorneys, constantly growing our unit. And I think about this because, Sten, you and I, as business owners, we want to build a team where we're surrounded by A players constantly. But what if there are more A players that are saying, hey, Sten, I want to join you, or Rick, I want to join Midas Wealth? Would I ever say no? Absolutely not. And if I don't have the capacity to pay them or welcome them to my firm, it's my problem. So as I think about the next future, I think within 5 years, we're going to 10x in size. And in order for me to sustain that, I have to constantly build the systems, automate it, and embrace technology, which is what we're doing.
Love that. How are you handling when you see in your team people that are coming up that are learning from you when they hit resistance? How do you coach them through it? I think about it with my kids. I don't want to make things easy for them. I don't want to rescue them all the time from it. But I do want to show them, hey, there's a path up here. Turn right. Consider it. Like giving them a little bit of guidance, but not removing the struggle. How are you handling that with your team?
So with our team, I think oftentimes we assume everyone is okay because we're so busy, but it's weekly check-ins. I spend more time, and I'm proud to say this, or maybe not proud right now. I know I spend more time with my team members than my own children. But on the weekends, I spend it with my children and because we're building something incredibly special. And it's not about how much resources we have. I teach them how to be resourceful, but as I embrace Traction, Gino Wickman, and the EOS system, we're building this massive machine where whether our team members first join us, I always talk about the three levels of training. The first one is I'll show you what to do, Stan. The second level is we'll do it together. And the third level, which most advisors forget, is you do it while I monitor and I support you so that you graduate and do it on your own. And then once you graduate that stage, let's talk about the next 6 to 12 months and how we can clone you and move you to the next version or role that you like to be. So it's constantly supporting them, meeting. Like I said, I see my team every day, weekends, we talk, we hang out. Sometimes it's all blended. There's no work-life balance. It's work-life integration, blending. But I support them. I believe in them. And I think what matters most, regardless of our role, just as human beings in society, the first resistant is mindset. Mm-hmm. Is mindset. Let's say, Sten, you and I have all the tools to be building a massively successful financial planning firm, but you don't believe in yourself, it's game over. And I find, and there's a saying, right? I think it's National Institute of Science says an average person has 7 negative thoughts a minute, hundreds an hour, thousands a day. And there's so much trash talk in our own head, right? That I have those as well, but I have more inspiring talks to myself where I constantly go to my team and I try to inspire, uplift, and help them. And someone asked me recently, said, Rick, how do you stay so motivated and consistent? And I actually said to them, the simplest way to explain it, consistency and motivation is not real. I think we give too much credit to consistency and motivation, but I talk about a book called, I think it's by Joseph Murphy, called The Power of Your Subconscious Mind. If you are able to, our mind is fragile and weak like any muscle unless we put time and effort to train it. So because when people say, hey, I'm not motivated, I'm not inspired, I'm not consistent, you know what I just think? You haven't experienced enough hard things in your life to get yourself out of that selfish mindset to actually help you take action. So when I work with my team, I'm constantly motivating, inspiring, believing in them. And then because I tell them, they inspire me to be better every single day.
Yeah. I'm thinking to myself when I was 23, 24, if I was listening to this podcast with us, that there's probably some things I would think I understood, but I haven't experienced enough reps in the business or life to like feel it in my body. To me, it comes down to the man in the arena poem is great. It's like, as long as you stay in the arena, you will get the reps. And if you can push harder than others, you'll get more reps faster. And you will get to this place to where, and I look back and I was like, man, I had some mentors that probably were so frustrated because they were telling me something. They're like, you're not hearing it. And it's like, no, I'm hearing you. And they're like, no, but you're not hearing it. Because I just couldn't internalize it yet at that point in my life with my life experience. And so for everybody listening, obviously Rick has reached a peak. He's not slowing down. But there's elements of his story of like, hey, he was where you are 5-10 years ago. He just didn't give up and he kept pushing through. And I'm sure there's things now, maybe even quotes in your life. I know when I read some, I'm like, oh, it means something totally different today than it did when I read it 10 years ago. And I think 10 years from now, as long as I don't give up, it's going to be even deeper and it's going to be even more impactful for me. And so thanks for sharing your story, man. I always love hanging out with you. And for everybody listening, don't give up, but that doesn't mean grind out average behavior. Like try to be different, lean into resistance, and find a path. If everyone in our business is doing one thing, that's probably a sign that you should probably do something different if you really want different results.
If you want to be extraordinary, you can't do what's ordinary. And as Russell Wilson said when he was a young boy, watching his NFL heroes win the championship, why not me? Why not me? Everything you and I want to accomplish in life, why not us? And it's really taking power of your subconscious mind where you manifest it happening before it happens. And it's not just the physical reps that we have and take. It's actually the mental reps that we're taking too. I end with this. I truly believe that the reason why the Michael Jordans, the Kobe Bryants, the LeBron James of the world, or you name the person in the sport that is the GOAT, the legend, during their normal hours, they're putting time into their craft. But I do believe that during their sleeping hours, their subconscious mind is also putting time to work, which is why they're constantly training to getting to that best level.
Good word. Keep crushing it, brother, and keep being healthy.
You too. Same to you, Stan. All the very best. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for having me on your 200th episode.
Thanks, bud. Talk soon.
Talk soon, bro.
Dave, welcome back to the podcast.
Good to be here, brother.
Yeah, it took me a while to track you down. You're a world traveler and a busy man, so finally got you back.
Yeah, it's good to be back here, brother. I'm excited to talk about breaking through resistance today.
No doubt. Well, this is the 200th episode, so I appreciate you taking time. And the theme, what I want to unpack, resistance. I know you well personally. We're buddies. So I know your story, your business journey, personal journey, and resistance. You've definitely faced it, overcome it. So for our listeners, as much as you're willing to share, I want to kind of dive into that. And I think a good place to start is, when did you become aware of resistance? Like in your story, in your life, I think we all feel it, but I know for all of us, the date we realize, hey, there's this thing that's acting against me is usually different. So what was that? When I say that to you, what comes to mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what comes to mind is, you know, John Maxwell talks about this, failing backwards and failing forwards. And I would say I noticed resistance when I realized that I'd been failing backwards for a long time. I always knew that I had a good brain. I knew, you know, how to think. I really started feeling the resistance from when I realized that I can't possibly work anymore. And I've reached the peak of what I can make with me being completely burnt out. I was a solo show, any of the team members that I had were all just kind of peons, you know, minions that did my bidding. And I was the product. I was the person that made the business happen. And I think that the biggest kind of point of resistance that I felt was, I was like, man, like I either have to burn out to make a good amount of money or I got to do something differently.
Yeah. When you say that, explain to me the failing forward versus failing backward concept.
Yeah. So I actually had the opportunity to meet John Maxwell a couple months ago. And he talked to me about this idea of, you know, every leader fails, right? So he did interviews with every week he does a lunch meeting interview with top world leaders, major business, business owners, all of that. And whenever he asks them, like, what led to your success, all of them start with a failure, every single one. This concept that he came up with from that was, you know, there's two ways to fail. Failing backwards, which means you don't learn the lesson. And so you just go do another round around the hamster wheel. Or failing forward, which if we're going to grow businesses and learn and develop, and we need to fail, right? Failure is an absolute necessity. But when you fail forward, you fail, you learn, you grow, and then you enter back in at another level. And that was, I mean, honestly, that was the shift, and we can talk about that. Once I realized that, I mean, I've been failing backwards for years, I showed up to the same point. I don't know if you guys ever felt this, but you build this thing, you got this thing, new idea, new business, whatever it is. But then you always get to that point where you can never get past, right? And that's where I realized I needed to change what I was doing, change the approach.
I love that. I think there's power in normalizing things that we all go through, and like failure being like, it's not if you're going to fail, but it's when, and then how do you respond to it? And I think the idea for me, resistance, is that I would try things and it would work, and I would try other things and it wouldn't work. And I would, my takeaway was, oh, it's just my ability in the moment to win or not, versus I'm realizing now resistance is always present. Like everything I try, I'm going to face resistance. And the quicker I can recognize it, then I can overcome it. But I think some of the head trash, and when I work with a lot of advisors, is like, oh, it's something wrong with me. Like I'm the reason it's not working. And it's like, no, that's not the case at all. There's actually a path forward that people from any background can take and succeed. But we need to normalize things along the way so that when they come, not if, you're not thrown off by it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, I think it's a really good, I think that when you are receiving resistance, it's actually, it says it somewhere, that's wind in your sails, right? So when you actually have resistance, usually in the right track, right? I think that yes, some of it could be us, but I think the majority of it is principles. There's actually a way to build business the right way. And Sten, I know I've worked with you. I know that you guys have principles that you follow. And I think that sometimes, at least in my case, and I'll share this here in a minute, but in my case is I wasn't following principles, right? Mm-hmm. Like any business, when you start a business, requires the founder to be a part of it in a big way, to be the hero of the business in a big way, because it's just you, you know? But I had not learned the principles of scaling, which requires you to level up in your leadership, requires you to start learning from your mistakes and failing forward. And then it also requires a team, right? And helping a team to do that as well.
What in your story, and you can kind of take us back, because where you've reached now, the people you get to work with, the amount you can charge, I'm sure there was a point where Day was like, I'd never charge that fee. Like, people wouldn't say to that. Give us a kind of a high level overview of kind of how you've moved from where you were to where you are, and kind of some key resistance points along the way that you had to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, like I shared earlier, the biggest resistance was I could not duplicate myself, right? Like, I could not clone myself. And now, knowing what I know now, I would have not wanted to clone myself, right? Because I'm a visionary, I'm a strategist, but I realized that, you know, I had gotten to a point where, you know, I was charging $5,000 for 2 days with a client, or two and a half days with a client. And it was all me, right? I had a couple of assistants that made sure that everything was organized and all that stuff. When it really took off was when I realized that I'm better with other people that are highly skilled. And I still wanted to run my own business, but I have a couple of names here that I just wrote down. Like, the first one was Rebecca. And I'm a creative. Rebecca is very organized. And so we started being able to work with clients, and I was able to get a lot more done, right? The delivery was a lot better. And then I realized, man, I'm not charging enough, right? And I'm still working my tail off, right? But at least I had someone else to kind of take on part of the load, and the product was getting better. And there's kind of several, because I have three companies now. And then it was Caleb and Titus. And Caleb and Titus are AI technology gurus. And they started being able to, like, make things go even better. And so then I started to be able to charge more and more because, again, the product kept getting better. And then I brought on Stephen and Mary, and we started the 3XP company, 3X Practice, where we started to help doctors really scale their businesses. I brought in Abby and they help run the Digital Architect brand, which is my original company that is a consulting company. And what I'll say is, like, with each of those people, the resistance that I ran into was I still wanted to be the hero. I still wanted to come in and save the day. And the biggest breakthrough that I had in all of this was realizing that, number one, I was not going to ever outgrow my level of leadership. Instead, if you'd like me, I could share. I have a playbook that I made for you guys that I could share with everyone. Just goes through the levels of leadership and evaluating where you're at and what you need to do to grow. But I realized that for me to actually scale my time and scale my finances, right? Because I was scaling my finances by delivering a better product, but I was still the hero in the product. Once I realized that, no, my greatest skill set is strategy, and then everything else, not just a little bit, everything else I need to have a team for. And my role is not just to do strategy and then go to take a nap. No, my role is to do strategy and then level up the team. A company I worked with several years ago, their CEO, it scaled to $500 million company. Their CEO started off as an assistant, and now he's the CEO of the company, right? Huh. And so I realized that if I can find great talent and then not just, like, have them be their boss, but really be their leader and help them develop. And so helping Caleb and Titus develop. And then now they run Patient Autopilot. Helping Mary and Steven develop. Now they run 3X Practice. Helping Abby and Elizabeth develop. Now, it's not that they're skilled in areas that I'm not skilled in, Sten. So it's like, I'm trying to help them develop in their skill, but it's, and you do a great job of this. I'm sending them to events. I'm connecting with them with other people. But once I realized that the growth happens when I go from Frodo to Gandalf, right? Or Harry to Dumbledore. No, I'm serious. Or you know what I'm saying? I actually become their guide and that leader that guides them for them to become the best that they can be. Now, I might work on a client project, like one of these projects that I'm working on. We have a great contract. We're doing $20,000 a month on the contract. And the two team members that I have running it, they make 10K a month. They are overwhelmingly happy with making that 5K each. And I work on that business maybe an hour a week, maybe a half hour a week, and that's it.
Wow.
I had figured out how to make more money, and then I figured out I can make even more money with other team members. And then the third kind of learning resistance that I hit, I just was so tired. And you knew me probably during some of those times where it was like, Dave, are you there? It's like, man, I've just been thinking all day long, you know? Yeah. But that was kind of that third failure, that when I learned that if I can develop them to actually run the show, then I can do what I do best. You know, I can be strategic. I like to say it, you know, the example I like to give, and I wrote this down, it's like you have a ship and you're spending all your time in the engine room and there's no one at the helm. I don't know if you ever feel that, where you're just grinding away, getting stuff done. And yeah, we're moving, but the ship is just going wherever it wants to go, because I am so bogged down in the day to day. That once I realized that if I could empower other people, I call them diamonds in the rough, finding other people that are extremely talented, that with the right leadership, they could really create something. And then now it's their business, right? It's their vision that's driving them forward. It's not me, you know, as the boss kind of trying to drive them forward. And now I can charge more than I've ever charged before, spend less time than I've ever spent before, and actually get better results than I've ever gotten before, because I'm not getting into a business and just imagine Frodo or Gandalf in the story of Lord of the Rings was always with Frodo, right? He wouldn't have moved the things that needed to be moving for the story for us to win. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The guide does not always need to be in the business. The guide needs to be thinking, they need to be at the helm of the ship, seeing where it's going and saying, well, I'm going to help the engine room person make the engine work better, right? I'm going to help other people run this ship, and I'm going to be the guide.
Yeah, I think we can all agree, for everybody listening, that the healthiest business is one where it's not fully reliant on one person. That's risky. And what's tough about the financial advisory space is that's pretty much the business model for 90% of practices, is you have the one gal or one guy, everybody else is supporting them, but you're going to stop as soon as they hit their capacity, or they reach an income level where they're comfortable. And then they say, hey, I'm just going to not work as much. I just want to hang out. And then I feel like that's pretty uninspiring when your team's like, oh, you know, Jim, Julie, they're going to come in 2 days a week and then they're going to travel a lot. And we're here just kind of maintaining what's here.
Yeah.
I do find when I meet with a lot of advisors, even if their personal income is sufficient, there's still something in most of them that's like, I think there's something more here. Like, I don't know if this is my potential. I don't know if I'm done. And for me, there was a couple points of resistance when I realized it can't just be me. There was probably a stage where I wanted to be the hero all the time. And I realized, like, no, that's actually not ideal. Is that I had to, one, hire better people, find those people that you're talking about. But for me, it was mindset and process. I'd actually have a better hiring process. It's one thing to want it and believe that those people exist. It's another to hire in such a way that it protects you from just hiring the person that says they're qualified or that they're a nice person. And that's where I got in trouble. So as you went through that of like the hiring, if we can sit on that for a minute, what resistance did you face there? Because I'm sure every single one wasn't a home run. Some were, hey, they're good, but I have to help develop them. Because people are listening, a lot of advisors aren't good at hiring. They're scared to hire. We all look at the best ones, and they do have teams. The top advisors have teams. They're leaders. They're doing what you're talking about. But in our industry, that's a really small group.
Yeah, I mean, I think step one is you don't hire for the person, you hire for the position. So step one is you actually have to have a plan of what do we want to accomplish here, right? Like, think about and simplify it. Think about it like an MBA team, right? Like, what do we want to accomplish? We want to win a championship. Okay. What's our scheme, right? What's our plan to get there? Okay, what team members do I need for that? I think sometimes we find someone, we get excited about that person, but then we kind of create a role for them. So I think step one for me is always, what's the objective, and then what do I need? Like, what are the roles first that I need, and then hire into those roles, right? I think number two is character is more important than anything else for me. I can train in a lot of skills. If I know they have the general skill and knowledge for that, but they then and their character is good, I can develop them. Now, you also got to decide, is this a position that I have time and energy to develop someone in, or do I need someone that is already ready to go? But I will say, Sten, by far, the number one thing that matters to me is character and work ethic, right? Because if someone has good character and they're willing to work and they have the raw materials to do that job well, I know I can develop them.
How do you test for that? I came across an integrity assessment that we're looking at adding to our hiring process. Are you kind of like, hey, I just trust my gut? Or how are you handling the work ethic?
I did two interviews. And oftentimes I try to have one of my other team members do the first or the second. And I essentially ask the same questions in different ways. And I'm happy to share with you kind of the questions, Sten, that I ask it to find what if this person has good character. I will say the one question that has gotten me, that has given me the best insight has been, who are three people you admire and why? Right. And then in the next meeting, who are three people that you look up to? And if it can be someone else, you want it to be the same person. Right. Another question that I love to ask is, tell me about your job experience and why you moved from role to role. And don't just let them talk and just be like, okay, yeah, that's good. No, take notes and then ask follow-up questions. So when you're at this role, right, what caused you to want to move to this role? Okay. And then I'll give one more piece of advice in the hiring is always call their references. Even if the reference that you call was like, oh man, this guy is toxic, we have a good, you're still going to get some insight from that. We hire fast because we have a need that needs to be filled, right?
Oh yeah.
And then we fire slow because we have a relationship with them. We feel bad for their family, you know, all that stuff. We need to hire slow and fire fast. Yeah. If you're sitting here thinking about your team and saying, have I ever thought about firing this person? Or if I had to rehire them today, would I?
Yeah.
The answer is, have I ever thought about firing them? Yes. And the other one is, if I had to rehire them, no. Then you need to fire them fast, right? The business is actually better without them there. The gap that would be created without them there than having the wrong person there. So those are a couple of the questions that I asked them, but I do think that character by far, like, can I work with this person? Can I develop this person? Like, that's all I'm thinking about is, can I develop this person? And if they're not hungry, humble, and willing to grow, then I can't develop them. They might fit they've done all these different things, but if they're not hungry, humble, and willing to grow, the business will never run without you. Because they're going to stay in their ways, right? If they're hungry, humble, and willing to grow, we can develop them to a point where they can take over ownership of an area of a business of the business.
That's good. All right, so back to you as a business owner. But most people we're talking to, entrepreneurs, business owners, leading a firm, I found that the degree that somebody pursues personal growth and awareness is typically tied pretty closely to their growth path and their success. Yet most advisors I meet are, I would say, average or below average on their financial spend, their time spend on development and trying new things. Where was that triggered in you? Because you're the things you do, you're all in as a friend watching you with the places you go, the people you meet.
Right.
When did that take off for you? And what would you say to the people listening that, you know, if we said, hey, on a scale of 1 to 10, how aggressively do you invest in yourself and, you know, spend money and time to grow? If most people were honest, they're probably below a 5. But would you say get to a 9 as quick as possible?
I mean, I would say 30% of my time during the week is my personal development. Once I realized that this, what I'd share with you guys, that if I can help these people level up, then that's what creates the freedom for me. I knew that if I wasn't, you know, I think of it like you're climbing a mountain. Right, you're on a cliff and I'm reaching and climbing and someone is holding and helping me up, right? And then my other hand is reaching down and I'm helping them up, right? But if you ever rock climbed or seen people rock climb, you ever seen when someone's just stuck, you ain't helping anybody, right? And so instead, I will say that we all have blocks, right? We have limiting beliefs, we have things that we haven't. I think of leadership like a stairway that you're walking up. And I don't know if you've ever been on, walked up a stairs and there's a ceiling, right? You're like, wait, I can't kind of stuck here, right? And I think some ceilings are glass ceilings, right? That you can just bust right through. But all of us have our concrete ceilings that require a jackhammer. Hmm. And so for me, a big part of it was getting a business coach, getting a life counselor, someone that I can talk to and talk to about my life. And then, I mean, I would say the biggest thing by far is my community. It's people like you. You're one of my best friends, Sten. Like, it's being around people that will challenge you and call you forward, bring awareness to your weak points and let it, and real relationships. You know what I'm saying? Relationships that are there for you when you're going through it, that keep your mind focused on the right thing. So I would say that I knew that I had to grow. Because I knew that if I wasn't going to grow, and it's uncomfortable to grow, by the way. Like, this is not the, you know, it was uncomfortable doing my cold plunge this morning. You know what I'm saying? But that's like, I got to beat the flesh into submission so that I can go and grow. but yeah, I mean, I would say that most people don't even think about it. They're using their skill and their talent. And a lot of people think that that's what's going to get them there. But the reality is that skill and talent will only get you so far. And if you heard anything from my story today is, that's what I relied on for the first 35 years of my life or 34 years of my life. And once I realized that if I can develop and grow as a leader, people will follow me and I'll be able to develop people and then they will be able to execute the mission. And that's where leadership really takes off. And you can actually create a business that is not, you know, that doesn't have a ceiling, right? The ceiling is endless, right? Because as long as you can continue to level up yourself, so to answer your question in brief, about 30% of my week, I would say about 2 to 3 hours a day, I'm spending in Bible study, doing, entrepreneurs groups, having lunch with people like Sten. When I'm going through a challenge or I'm stuck on something, I never try to solve it myself. I'm always getting on the phone, whether it's a mental challenge, a roadblock, a business roadblock. I'm always thinking who, not how. Who can I talk to that will help me? But Sten, for me, like, growth is not an option. Like, I must be growing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I must be growing. And I must be able to look back the last, like, I'd encourage everybody listening to this. Think back over the last 6 months. And where have you really grown in, right? Like, really think back. Be like, have I really grown? Or have I kind of just stayed the same? And if you've stayed the same, I highly encourage you to look at the community of people around you. Look at the coaches that you have around you. Obviously, EAN, if you're not in EAN and not being coached by Sten, that would be a great place to start. But it really comes down to, like, if you're not growing, something needs to change. Because the business, I could tell you all the business, believe me, I got plenty of business strategies. I can give you all the business strategies out there. But at the end of the day, like, we are only going to go as far as our leadership. And that's what broke me through the resistance, was actually being able to become aware. That's the biggest part. Awareness is like 90% of the work. Aware of my weak points and say, you know what? I'm humble enough to go and get help for this, right? Go and really work on this. Do the hard work for this.
That's helpful. Well, you're unpacking that because I know your story and it made me think of my story, that I think there's a point of resistance with relationships as you grow. Whether you're holding on to team members too long because there's history there. And I even think about, like, friends of mine that as you grow, not everyone goes with you. And I've learned hard is that there are people actually that don't want you to grow. Like, they, by being around your growth, it makes them feel something they can't handle.
Yeah.
What would you say to that with your story? And I think I want to normalize this for people too, is that, like, part of resistance is, like, how your circle will change when you're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, that's really good. I mean, I think that people know you, people meet you at this point, right? And then if you've been staying the same for a while, you're probably, your friend group will kind of stay the same, and the people that you affiliate will stay the same. But then as you grow, you then move to this point, right? And if they're not growing, then they will still treat you like you're at this point. Hmm. They will still relate with you. The conversations they'll have with you will still be at this point. And I'm not saying that you always need to, like, Sten, I've known you for many, many years and we've both grown in the process. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you get, you're a newer version, better version of yourself. I'd like to say that I'm a better version of myself. But you were growing and I was growing and it was like, we're on the same path to grow. You know what I'm saying? But I will say that, I've had several business partners, dear friends, that they were not growing. And because of that, as I grew, there was jealousy or, you know, they're talking to you like you're the person that you were, you know, this can happen with teen too. Right. And we can ruin teen this way, not ruin them, but it's like, these people probably still need to go. Is like, maybe you were the business owner that was kind of all over the place or didn't have a level 10 meetings, didn't create growth plans. And all of a sudden you're like, I want to really grow. It's like, you may have team members that are like, I like the Dave that you used to be. That's not my ass. You know what I'm saying? So I think that number one, I really think it's important to evaluate the people that are around you. And the people that, if you're around a lot of people that are all staying the same, you already got, you guys already know this, you're going to stay the same. Does it mean that all relationships need to get cut off? No, not necessarily. I think it's just very important to evaluate the conversations that you're having. I mean, there'd be times where I'd have a conversation with someone and realize I've outgrown this relationship. I've just outgrown this relationship, you know? And every season has its beginning and end. And we all have relationships that have come and gone. And there's certain people that like Sten is a great dad and I want to be a great dad. Now there's other things that we talk about, but I want to be a great dad. So part of the reason that I love spending time with Sten is I love just seeing him be a great dad. Like I went to his house for dinner the other night and I just love seeing the way that he takes care of his kids and loves on his kids. For me, that levels me up. Sten has already climbed a mountain, right? I don't have kids yet. And whether knowingly or unknowingly, is reaching down and grabbing me and showing me, hey, this is how you love your kids. This is how you discipline your kids. This is how you do this, right? So it's not all, I say that to say, it's not always in business, right? You don't have to just have friendships that are just, hey, we're just strictly business and they're leveling up in their business, so I'm leveling up in my business. Mm-hmm. I think in other areas of life, it's important too. Like if you are around people that are not good to their kids, right? And don't lead their kids the way you want to lead your kids, you will eventually become like them. I'm not saying you will eventually become like them. And so I'm always looking, I said it in hiring, character is important. I'm always looking at the character of the people that I'm spending my time with. And so let me add this one last thing. Don't be in relationships. I call them utility relationships. You can have business relationships or you're in business together, right? And we have a contract and we're in business together, okay? Utility relationships are, we take care of each other in business, but we're best friends, but it's really just because we're business partners, right? Because that leads to a lot of incongruency and can lead to a lot of pain and suffering when the business stops working, right? Or you stop working on certain things in business and then you realize, man, this is just about the business. So I encourage you, don't lie to yourself. If you have a relationship with someone, be genuine in that relationship, right? Like Sten and I don't do, we've worked on a lot of different things in the past. Currently, we have no business relationship together, but we still are in a relationship, right? Because it wasn't just because we did some business stuff together, right? It's like, so I really think that's another thing that's important is don't fake relationship so you can get something out of that person in business. It eventually comes out and eventually causes a lot of havoc. So I'd audit that for yourself as well.
That's great. Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say is you will have relationships that are just business. You will have relationships that are just personal. And the hope is you're growing in both. But as you grow, the next version of you doesn't mean you have to dismantle relationships. It doesn't even mean the time spent on those was wasted. But they will change. And I think being honest, and in a perfect world, there's this exercise my counselor has put me through called the circles of intimacy, where that becomes an issue is if you have somebody in your three and they have you in their eight, that's where you're like, hey, that person never invites me anywhere. Well, yeah, because they see you differently than you see them. So I think from a business standpoint, there's just healthy awareness that with growth, things will change around you. And if there's a part of you that's ever like, I want to hold to what's known, that's fear, that's resistance. That's going to stop you from making the decisions you need to. And what's tough is relationships are a really challenging area of resistance because the heart's involved. And I think at times there's a lot of opinions and people will get hurt. But I think a wise leader, a humble leader, you know, courage is you're doing it even though you're still scared. And I think for us fighting resistance in all areas, I think a lot of courage is required.
Yeah.
And for sure, because when you start to cut out the people that, if you haven't been cleaning house at all, you know, and you start having to release some of the relationships, like me, once I started to realize this and I realized that, hey, I got to get rid of some, like remove some of these different relationships that are really not helping me, you get to a pretty lonely place for a minute, right? Yeah. Because you're just, it needs to be, you know, you need some quiet, you know, you don't get invited. All of a sudden, man, I used to go out and have the party, got had people I could party with, this and this. And now it's just me and my dog. I got my dog. But it's just me and my dog, you know? But I will say that, number one, there's so much growth that happens in that quiet place. And number two, you start to really pursue relationships that help you grow. You know, like you really start to, now, believe me, there's relationships that I can see from a mile away that I stay so far from because I created that silence and really thought through.
Mm.
You know, for me, I'm a Christian. It's like, God, what's the best you have for me? Who are the best relationships that you have for me in my life right now? And then really, I started making a list, you know, like who are the people that I want to intentionally, if I was getting married, you know, who would be the people that I would want to invite to my wedding and want to be a part of my life after that? You know, I'm sure you guys have heard that, but like, who are those people? And then I'm consciously, when I said I spend 30% of my time during the work week developing, it's doing stuff like this, you know what I'm saying? And Sten would and I would have this conversation off video too, you know? But it's being super intentional with who are the people I want to connect with. And then I have it on the calendar, you know, like I have a regular rhythm on the calendar with the people that I want to be intentionally growing with. And you got to be okay. There's a lot of courage in that is required because it can be a lonely place, you know? And I think that sometimes we don't like the quiet because then that's when we actually start to, you know, there's some stuff that's been rotting in the closet that once we're quiet, we start to smell that stuff. And it's like, yeah, there might be some work that you got to do, you know, yeah. But it's worth it. It's really worth it.
All right, brother. Always good hanging out. We'll talk soon.
God bless, bro. See you guys. Yeah.